Good morning, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. We were supposed to start at 8:30. We're a little bit late, but we are going to get going. So today is Wednesday, February 15th. It is 8:35, and we are calling the Joint Committee of Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services, to order. And we have several items to work through today. Thank you all for being here. I think we'll just go ahead and get started. We'll start with a work session for the Department of Human Services, Federal Grant Application Approval Request, Employment First Grant. Anybody like to come up and visit about that a little bit? Maybe we can have a quick opening statement by our great administrative staff here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. This is a grant application request. It's related to employment for individuals with developmental disabilities.
Good morning, Chair Freeman, Chair Bates, members of the committee. I'm Mary Lee Fay, Director of Developmental Disabilities, Department of Human Services. And we're here this morning to request permission to apply for a grant that is through the Department of Labor. And it is a grant. The application just came out the very beginning of February, with the application due at the end of this month. It's a grant that focuses on supporting states in employment first strategies. It would offer the state $100,000 that would be used towards technical assistance and training, capacity building, and it would also provide the state with subject matter experts in the area of supported employment and integrated employment. The grant is has a six-month period. It's a very short but intensive time. Our commitment to the grant is making sure we have staff who are working on the issues, which, as you know from previous testimony, that is a large topic, a big agenda for our office, and we have staff dedicated to the topics of integrated employment. So we request permission to apply for this grant.
Great. So questions of the committee? Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just a clarification, when you say staff, you're not talking about adding new staff, but you're talking about the utilization of your current staff.
Co-Chairs and Senator Winters, correct. It is staff that are already working on the addition, so this will not create new staff to the department.
And can I assume that the staff is ready and poised to care, because 6 months is a short period of time?
Co-chairs and Senator Winters, we actually have already engaged in a strategic plan with our stakeholders, including our providers, Vocational Rehabilitation, and Department of Education. This grant would really help just leverage and move that agenda to kind of break through the issues.
Thank you. Thank
you. I would comment you wouldn't want to spend too much money on the planning, because you're not getting very much when it's coming in. So be a little careful with that. And I would recognize Co-Vice Chair Thatcher.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify. I was just looking at the little sheet that we have here, and it said DHS is already working on a five-year strategic plan to increase employment outcomes and decrease reliance on sheltered workshops. What does that mean? What is an employment outcome? Does it mean working with, you know, a regular employer, or is there something other than that is intended?
Yes, co-chairs and co-chair, vice chair Thatcher, yes, the employment outcome is really trying to make sure we have the right strategies so individuals are in integrated employment. That means that they are working in the community, hired by local businesses, with the right supports. Obviously, economic times is challenging, so we can't guarantee the employment outcome, but we believe that there are many more opportunities than we have realized, and believe that we can really increase it, especially for children youth leaving high school.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Winters.
Just to piggyback that, because I'm the state director for women in government, and at our recent meeting in Phoenix, I believe Walgreen is actually working on this particular concept of taking from a sheltered workshop with developmental disabled into their retail and other aspects of their country.
Yes.
Companies. So are you familiar with that?
Co-chairs and Senator Winters, yes, we are working with outreach with both Walgreens, Lowe's, and some of the hospital settings that have a national agenda of increasing employment for people with significant disabilities.
Oh, which, by the way, Mr. Co-Chair, the Women in Government Regional Meeting will be in Portland, May 10th.
Great. Everybody get that?
Women legislators from Oregon. Did you get that?
She's looking right past me.
Put on your calendar.
So if Tim and I go and drag, can we get the door?
I may invite you without you coming in.
We had men at the Women's Campaign School in Portland last weekend, 2 weekends ago. Sorry. That was fine.
Representative Boyle.
Could I ask how would this grant and what kind of work you do with Garden Industries or other qualified rehabilitation facilities? Actually, I think they're the only one, but could you talk about that?
Yes, co-chairs and Representative Hoyle. The Employment First agenda is working with all of our providers who support individuals with developmental disabilities, intellectual and other developmental disabilities, and that includes sheltered workshops or other facilities such as Garten and other places. And the agenda is, and it's a national agenda, that really says how do we make sure opportunity, not just opportunities, but we're doing the work to really increase the employment opportunities for people in the community so they're not solely reliant on sheltered workshops. And many of our current providers are at the table with us with the same agenda, wanting to make those opportunities available and really broaden the whole work concept. So those providers are sitting at the table with us, are part of the strategic planning, and I believe will be part of the long-term solution.
Thank you. I think that's really important, and to have a broad spectrum of places that we're working with, not just one or two. I think that's great.
Great. Thank you. So I believe it would probably be appropriate to entertain a motion on this.
Mr. Chair, before you do that, I'd just like to put one comment on the record that there is no state match requirement for this grant or ongoing funding commitment. Although the agency expects to continue the work, there's no requirement in the grant that happen.
Okay. So do we have a motion prepared, or somebody like to entertain a motion?
Co-Chair, I move that we approve the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Labor Office of Disability Employment Policy for up to $100,000 to support Oregon's effort to improve employment for individuals with developmental disabilities.
Thank you for that incredibly detailed motion. I very much appreciate that. And is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? If not, the motion carries. We need a carrier, and I think because of your intense and very in-depth motion, I would ask you if you'd like to carry it to full ways and means.
I'd be very happy to.
Senator Winters, please. Very good. Thank you. So,
Mr. Co-Chair, may I ask a question of you for my edification as the most junior member here? The other day in General Government Services, we had Treasury come back to get permission to spend a grant that they just have. Assuming that they're awarded this grant, will they then need to come back to us for permission to spend it?
Probably, because we did it ahead of time, not. What happens oftentimes is there's retroactive grants where they'll apply for a grant and they're interim and we're not here, and then they have to come back afterwards and ask for either the permission to apply for the grant or to spend it. But I'm sure our legislative fiscal office could answer that a little better than I did.
It doesn't have to go in detail, but I was just struck by that. So thank you for your information.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, technically agencies are required to come in to get application approval. They are not required to come in to get approval to spend the grant. The only time they would come in afterwards, well, there are several reasons they would come in afterwards, if they need expenditure limitation. So in this case, if the agency needed $100,000 or more of federal funds expenditure limitation, they could come in and ask for that at an emergency board or a subsequent session of the legislature. Sometimes the approval is contingent upon agencies coming back in and reporting what they're doing, but there is no requirement per se that they come in and get approval to spend it once they've gotten application approval and if they have sufficient budget authority.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just...
Senator Winters.
Just one little other further point of clarification for the good senator, that often we will ask them to come back, particularly if there is position authority.
That's correct.
Position.
That's whether grant them the permission to either hire or to do temporary, so that...
Thank you. I don't mean to take up too much of the committee's
time. No, that's a good question.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and move on to the next agenda item. And we've got a little change in chairs here, but thank you very much for being here. So we'll open a work session on a federal grant application approval request for a comprehensive primary care initiative. Welcome. Can we have just a quick rundown on it, and then we'll cover presenters.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a retroactive request to apply for a federal grant to promote primary care. It was submitted about 3 weeks ago, and although the agency did go through the regular process of submitting their letter of intent, and so here today they're here to describe the details.
Welcome.
Chair Freeman and members of the committee, I'm Janine Smith, the Administrator for the Office of Health Policy and Research in the Oregon Health Authority. And we, as the LFO staff mentioned, we are here for a retroactive approval for an application we put in that brings enhanced funding to primary care providers. It comes at an important time as we are trying to support the success of the patient-centered primary care home. And it's through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, and it brings together multiple payers. They are bringing the Medicare dollars to the table. In addition to what this request is to pay for 100% for Medicaid fee-for-service dollars, and we have additional 6 to 7 payers who have also submitted their application. So collectively, if we were selected as one of the 5 areas of the country to participate in this innovation center's activity, we would then all be brought together by the center, and 75 clinics in the region would be selected to get this enhanced payment in order to be patient-centered primary care homes. So this is for a 4-year period. The feds are putting on as much as $20 PMPM enhanced payment to these clinics with their Medicare traditional fee-for-service dollars. So, and the payers that we have agreed, as we have worked with those in the community, include Providence, Regents, Quality, Care Oregon, and Pacific Source that we know of at this point, who all put in their own applications for this. So we look forward to being able to be selected, although they're only picking, as I said, about 5 areas of the country to do this.
So great. Thank you. I have a couple questions. You used some fairly vague terms. You talked about areas of the country. I'm curious if that means states. And the second question is, you talked about regions of the state. I wish maybe you could define that a little bit closer to what that means, so these counties or geographical areas, or what that means.
Chair Freeman, what the federal application said that they would pick 4, 5 to 6 regions of the country. So they're looking for markets. They're looking for areas where all the payers are willing to put all their dollars together to really drive this change. And what I understand from our national friends is that that we were one of the areas of the country that had the most number of plans putting in applications collectively to do this. So regions, or CMS thinks about it in terms of regions. We're region 10. So I guess our major, they may pick one of the regions of the CMS regions to pick an area, but they're really looking for market force to all the payers together doing this to help drive the change. Once we're selected, the feds will come and pull all the payers together, and then we'll collectively decide what the areas in Oregon would be, primarily probably be 75 clinics. We're looking at it as across the state, so we're not necessarily saying it would be aggregated in one area of Oregon, but it's where we have the most participation by all the payers in the state. Does that...
So Region 10 is multiple states.
It is.
And the 75 clinic regions you described could be around the state, or they could be concentrated in a certain area depending on who wants to participate.
Chair Freeman, you are correct. We were, it's an unusual way to do a grant. It's normally we would have gotten everything together and had it all laid out for you, but the way the center really asked us to is that each payer puts in that they're interested in participating, and then they bring us together to decide exactly the final details. So we certainly can report back that. And our competition is, as you said, Washington and California. As far as I know, we don't know whether California put in an application. And my understanding, Washington may have done it in the Spokane area only, but not across the entire state.
Thank you. Senator Winters.
Thank you. How does this fit with our health transformation effort, number one? Because there should be conversation with CMS and the work that we're doing there so that we're not actually bringing in a grant that fragments or diminishing the work that bill that we just passed yesterday. So can you explain how this fits with the overall plan of development of CCO, since you're talking about primary homes? So can you...
Chair Freeman and Senator Winters, this is an extraordinary opportunity to bring in some dollars to really fuel the patient-centered primary care home, which is the core and basic need we need to help be a successful CCOs. So this is a great opportunity to bring in some new dollars to these clinics to be able to make that change to being an enhanced care coordination that is really unprecedented to see Medicare at the table in addition to these private payers. So it nicely complements the coordinated care organization and does not work against us in any way.
Follow up. In your conversation, and you referred to the Measure of Friends, are you having the conversation because they're looking at rates? Because when you tell me that they're talking about additional dollars, I think, to the providers, because Oregon, really, we have not been one of their favorite children across the state when I look at how they calculate the rate distribution across the country. So will that be a factor at all?
Chair Freeman and Senator Winters, this is money that goes directly to the providers. It's an enhanced payment to the provider, so it gives them additional dollars on top of what they're going to be paid for the actual, you know, day-to-day care of the patients.
It's an encouragement.
It's a very innovative approach. There are about 5-6 areas in the state that have been doing this with Medicare that we weren't quite ready to be participating
in. You call it innovative. I call it the carrot to get us to do.
And this is another opportunity to finally get to bring Medicare to the table with the commercial payers, with Medicaid, to all collectively drive this.
Maybe I should pose my question differently. Okay. The Medicare patient, the amount that's paid across this country is not
right.
Equal.
Correct.
And I don't know if the conversation has been with CMS about this particular issue that would put us at maybe an advantage in your grant application.
Chair Freeman, Senator Winters, I think what this does is what the Center for Innovation is doing some pilot things like this to really demonstrate to Medicare that if you fuel more dollars to states in a way that there, you can get enhanced care. So I'm sure that I'm not sure that our lower or higher Medicare rates necessarily make us more eligible for this, but I think our efforts towards transformation certainly make us want to be a partner they would want to partner with in order to do this. And it starts that continues that conversation of what is fair and equitable rates in Medicare.
Okay, and I want to make sure for everybody that's listening, they understand the difference between the transformation project, which is primarily Medicaid, which is Oregon Healthcare Plan, and your discussion about Medicare. Oftentimes those terms get
correct.
Blended together, and they're distinct different programs. And I'm glad that they'll work together in this initiative, but there is a slight difference in the Medicaid transformation work we're doing and what you're describing as a Medicare enhancement for primary care. So I have several other people in the queue. We do have several other items to get to today, so we're going to keep going down this, but let's try to be concise. So next I'd like to recognize co-chair Dr. Senator Bates.
Thank you. Doctor, I'm going to ask this question a little kind of as clearly as I can. Many private practices have long wanted to go to a different payment methodology, get off fee-for-service and get into some kind of a capitated or a panel payment. What stops us from doing that is that you might be able to do it with one payer, one insurance company, not the next, or you might be able to do it with Medicaid, not a commercial payer. The cost of making those kind of changes in the practice is impossible. Okay, you have a whole staff set there just to do billing and figuring out what was paid, not paid, and all the rest of it. I mean, the amount of overhead that is involved in this is amazing. Probably the biggest piece of cost in a doctor's office, other than the nurse and the doctor, are the billing process. Okay, you've been in private practice long enough to do this. This mentions the possibility of commercial payers being in a different category along with Medicare and Medicaid. It leads to all kinds of questions in my mind. If you do it for 4 years, at the end of the 4 years, what do you do? During that 4 years, do you fire the staff that used to do this because you don't need them anymore? And all you need is one person there for seven or eight doctors just getting a monthly fee in from all the payers. And at the end of the 4 years, if they don't want to continue that, you have to go back to a fee-for-service model. There's lots of issues here. Plus, you have an opportunity to deal with patients not by churning them through your office, but by dealing with them over the phone, knowing that no longer matters if you bring them to the office to get paid. You can actually deal with most of it over the phone. Those things you really have to see in the office, you can focus on and spend a lot of time with. So those are all the kind of questions involved in this. Have you thought this thing through all the way and realized what this would mean, how many practices would go for this, and how many would say, I don't think I can do this, I'm just... 4 years is not a permanent change, is a partial change. And then CMS can look at the entire market and say, okay, has this changed admissions to hospitals, referrals to specialists? Has this changed the world as far as cost is concerned? I mean, those are big questions.
Chair Freeman, Senator Bates, we've had a really robust discussion with the payers around this application, and the payers have actually told us that they'd be interested in doing this kind of payment whether we got selected or not. So I found that very encouraging and really wanted to move towards this building off of the patient-centered primary care home standard tiering as a mechanism for it. So the other additional thing I didn't point out earlier is there's also some shared savings involved in this, and after 2 years of those 4 years, Medicare is actually going to be sharing savings. And I think this is really just a great stimulus to start down that road of what could potentially be a sustainable payment approach. And as we ask the CCOs to be doing alternative payment mechanisms, this is a great prototype of how the various plans, commercial, Medicaid, and potentially Medicare, because again, the Center for Innovation is looking for things that then Medicare could adopt going forward. So it brings all these payers from all different angles, which is in a practice where we have 17 different health insurers, all, as Dr. Bates noted, doing different things. It's a way to bring everybody together to do something uniform and together.
You know how hard this is going to be. But it's a great idea.
Great. I would recognize Senator Steiner Hayward, please.
I don't get the document. Thank you, Co-Chair Freeman. Dr. Smith, I was going to ask a lot of the same questions as Senator Dr. Bates, so I won't ask those. But I will tell you that I just did some, well, not really back of the envelope on my calculator, calculations. And if you take $1 million divided by 4 years, it's $250,000 a year. Divided by 75 practices, or is it $1 million per year?
Chairman, Dr. Senator Steiner Hayward. That's just the Medicaid fee-for-service dollars. You have, on top of that, to 75 clinics, $20 a head for the first 2 years, $15 a head of Medicare fee-for-service patients. Plus you have, if the clinic also has Pacific Source, Care Oregon, Regents, they all are paying a certain amount per head. So collectively,
okay,
each of these clinics are going to get a large per head amount of dollars. The million is just the part that would go through the Medicaid agency.
Okay, thank you. So just to clarify, if I may, Mr. Chair,
this will, whatever clinics you pick, they will get this payment for every single Medicare patient in their practice. There won't be discrimination based on payer source. The only difference will be how much they get per patient, depending on which payer is involved.
Chair Freeman, Senator Steiner, it would be Medicare Advantage plans would need to do their own. This is for Medicare traditional.
Okay.
So, but it is a combination of all the payers paying, agreeing to pay differently. Of course, from antitrust perspectives, we can't dictate to them exactly what they will pay, but it facilitates the conversation that they would all be paying differently, this enhanced payment on top of the day-to-day claims.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you have a motion?
Please.
I would move we approve retroactively the submission of the Federal Initiative Grant application to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Center for Medicare, Medicaid, and Innovations to promote primary care.
So we have a motion to approve the grant requests retroactively. Do we have any further discussion? Do we have any opposition? Not, motion carried. Dr. Bates, would you be interested in carrying this?
I'll carry that, but nobody can ask me any questions about it.
I will.
Not allowed.
Okay, with that, we'll go ahead. Do we need a work session on these?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll go ahead and open a work session on a report on dental service reductions. And we'll start with our legislative fiscal office staff with a quick summary.
Mr. Chair, during the 2011 session, the agency was asked to work with dental organizations and return in February with a plan that adjusts dental service reductions, but in a way that would still protect pregnant women and children. And so they are reporting on that work.
Good morning. My name is Judy Moore Peterson. I'm the Director of Medical Assistance Programs with the Oregon Health Authority. And I am here to report on the dental care reductions report that we were asked to write that we put together with input from the dental care organizations. You should have that report. We submitted that towards the end of January. Hopefully you've got that in your packet. So the reason that we were asked to take a look at this and to work with the dental plans is, as you may recall, all the managed care plans, but including the dental care organizations, needed to take reductions because we had overall rate reductions for the Oregon Health Plan. And the dental plans took a rate reduction of 11% that went into effect in October. Based on their input, et cetera, they recognized, and as did we, that taking this level of reduction would be very challenging and would could have the impact of severely impacting the infrastructure that's been built for dental within the dental community over the years for the Medicaid population. So we were asked to consider how we might be able to put together some options that would help mitigate that impact of the 11% rate reductions. In essence, what we found and what we've done is that we met on several occasions. We kept in mind trying to lessen or reduce the impact that would take place for children or on pregnant women. There were some recommendations. Some of them we were able to actually enact, and we have done so already, and we did that at the first part of January. And those included some limitations on various services for all adults, including pregnant women. Those were implemented January 1st of 2012. Overall, those service limitations did not impact or did not affect the overall pregnancy outcomes. They did not impact children. And so providers may also request, beyond those limitations, if they're necessary to support the pregnancy or if they would have an impact on pregnancy outcomes, that we would definitely allow the override. They would be able, those services would be able to be covered. Those limitations include limiting coverage for resident partial dentures, for back teeth only, limiting the frequency of periodontal work, from changing it from 2 years to 3 years, and some follow-up treatment, limiting coverage for dentures, and then limiting root canals to the first molars for pregnant women. I do want to note that actually in January 2010, as part of other dental reductions, root canals, molar root canal coverage had already been eliminated for other non-pregnant adults. So in that case, obviously the treatment, if it can't be filled, would most likely be extraction instead. So the other alternatives that were also considered were elimination of services. The limitations that I just spoke of, our estimations are that it would help offset those reductions by about 3% as opposed to the full 11% rate reductions. In order to we considered a number of different other options, and they include the elimination of a variety of dental services. These dental services are associated with 6 lines on the prioritized list of conditions, and they actually would affect pregnant women, although not the pregnancy outcomes themselves. They include root canals on all teeth. That would eliminate root canals on all teeth, and it would also eliminate treatment or retreatment for root canals. It would eliminate dentures, full, partial repairs, rebases, and relines. It would eliminate crowns. As you can tell, it would be, those are pretty major eliminations of a variety of dental services. If all those services were eliminated, it would save an additional 9.5 to 10.2% on the rates. It would have an impact largely on seniors and disabled, because those are the people who tend to use those services more than other services. It should be noted that there was actually not a consensus from all the dental plans that would be the appropriate direction to take. There was some recognition that some services may need to be limited if we were to try to save additional dollars. That is a summary of the report. If there are any questions.
I'm going to just a couple, then we'll get everybody. So thank you for the report. I recognize it's something we asked for and specific to how you did the reporting, but I do want to kind of ask you a question about sort of a broader dental baseline for reimbursement rates, and I believe these numbers are fairly accurate, and I'd like you to comment on them. So pretty much our per member per month rate in 2000 for dental was about $21.46. In 2010, it was $21.13. Over that 10-year period of time, it actually went down. 2011, it's all the way down to 1996. And for 2012, it's at 1709. So I want people to understand the broader context of what we've done to dental in the Oregon Healthcare Plan. It has, not only has it not increased over that 10-year period, but in the last few years, we really have taken some serious reductions. And I know that sounds like small amount in dollars. When you use it in percentages, it probably puts it in a better framework. So now as we're talking about additional cuts, it's already on top of what has gone on. I wanted to make sure everybody understood that this isn't one of those programs that over 10 years has just ballooned and gotten really expensive, and now we're trimming it back a little bit. It has always been very lean, and we're continuing to try to make it leaner for right or wrong. I just want to make sure everybody stands where we're at. Is that accurate?
Chair Freeman, yes, actually, that is accurate for the overall per member per month payment that goes to dental plans. I should say that I don't have those numbers sort of memorized, so I have seen them, and they do appear accurate. I would have to go back and look at the rate sheets, but I do want to comment that that is true. It has gone down, and the dental plans have worked very hard to try to maintain the program as best as they can, and to reach out and provide access to care for all the particular members. I do know that we've gotten a lot more children on. You know, we have more children on the Oregon Health Plan than we used to, and that does lead to a slight decrease in the overall rates if you average it across the whole population. But in general, they've been very efficient in trying to manage the dental care for the Oregon Health Plan clients.
Okay, and just I'll finish up and then let everybody else go, but I want everybody to be clear what we're saying here is because these people have been efficient and because they have not grown their programs like some other disciplines in the Oregon Healthcare Plan, now that we're saying we're going to cut everything 11%, they're starting from a much less inflated rate than some of the other services, and I just want everybody to realize that. So as we go through and make decisions on whether to continue to cut dental, that it's those decisions are based upon the entire, you know, 10 or 12 years of what's been going on there and not just on this last this budget period. So with that, I'll open it up to questions. Let's start at the far end and we'll work this way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Moore, as a family physician, one of the things that we're becoming acutely aware of is the close interaction between physical and dental health and oral health. And I'm not a dentist, so I can't know whether the cuts that you're proposing are ones that would have the kind of impact, but I worry, especially in our older patients, about nutrition, which is always an issue, and I worry about whether people are going to be able to control their diabetes if they have significant periodontal disease that's not adequately controlled by treatment every 3 years. And I would just appreciate a little bit of reassurance about what kind of process you went through to determine that the cuts that you chose, which, mind you, I completely understand what Co-Chair Freeman is saying and would make me more hesitant, frankly, to cut your program, that these cuts are not ones that would have a significant impact on the ability to control other aspects of someone's health.
Chair Freeman, Senator Steiner-Hayward, actually, they would have an impact on people's health if these particular, the elimination of those services were to take place. As we note in the full report, it can lead to people having challenges in meeting some other health related care. I guess I should also note that's why we are not recommending these. It was a matter of putting forward. We were asked to come forward with, okay, if you had to make benefit reductions, which ones would you make? So the ones that we put on here were actually from the prioritized list of healthcare services. And these are we started with the rankings and then just worked our way up. But to say that they would not have an impact on other aspects of people's health, I can't say that because they would.
May I ask a quick follow-up, Mr.
Please
Chair?
Please follow.
Thank you. So the per member per month rate decreases that Co-Chair Freeman described, were those based on the fact that these services were being cut out and that's why the capitated rate went down? Forgive me, because I haven't quite wrapped my head around all this yet, but in essence, are we saying that we can pay dentists a lower PMPM because they won't have to cover these services, or are we saying we're paying you a lower PMPM and we're saying you don't have to do these services, but they're kind of true and unrelated?
Chair Freeman, Senator Steiner-Howard, the reductions that took place out of the last budgetary time period were they took place without any sort of any changes in the overall dental benefit package. Now, you have seen some reductions over time within the rates that were being paid to the dental plans for a variety of different reasons. One of those reasons is that, as Chair Freeman already pointed out, as the dental plans are essentially efficient in providing services, in other words, they can provide them at a lower cost, and they do a good job of controlling utilization, et cetera, then the overall cost per person is going to go down, and then the amount that gets paid goes down. The other factor that's been at play with the dental rates has been that we've had more and more children come onto the Oregon Health Plan. Children's overall rates are much lower than an older adult, for example, and so the average cost per person winds up going down. And the third reason that the dental rates went down is because there was a pretty major reduction in the benefit package for dental in January of 2010. And so what's been suggested here would be to help mitigate the most recent rate reductions of 11% that went into effect in October of 2011 that were not accompanied by any kind of elimination of more dental services. What we were able to do is to put some limitations on the services, and those did go into effect in January of 2012, but not the elimination of the services. So the limitations went into effect to help mitigate some of that 11% rate reduction. But the elimination of services, we are just outlining those as possibilities for the legislature to consider to help mitigate the impact of the 11%. But there was not an overall consensus by all of the dental care organizations that was the direction, that was the recommended direction.
Thank you.
Is that helpful?
Very helpful. Thank you, Ms. Moore.
As we get into the weeds in this, I just want to bring us back up to the fact that this was a report that we asked you to put together because of what we did last time. We're not taking additional action on this committee. We're just trying to understand a little bit more of the inner workings of the way the dental program works, and this report helps with that. So with that, I'd recognize Senator Winters.
Thank you. In your discussion, did you discuss at all what impact it might have on cost shifting? Because when you have an individual that is impacted by the limitations, often or sometimes they end up in our emergency room, and that cost is a lot more costly than if it is that we were actually providing the service within the dental organization itself.
So, excuse me, before you start, you've hit the exact reason why the coordinated care organization global budget thing will be effective. What you describe as a cost shift, if that was within a global budget, you would have the incentive from a CCO to make sure that the primary care is taken care of before they end up in the emergency room. And with that, I'll let you answer.
Chair Freeman, Senator Winters, I don't think I could answer better than that. That was great, and that actually is the case. While it was discussed, it was actually not included in the overall net impact. So it likely would lead to an increase in other areas of the healthcare system.
Just a comment, because as we actually move along and talking health transformation and the work that's being done, it would be kind of nice, because not everybody in this 90 August membership has either had opportunity to be involved in this particular issue over a long period of time or not, and we have new people coming in. It would be kind of nice if somehow this piece is important, And that knowledge and information is important when you're going out to talk to the our communities and what have you of why we do what we do. So any information that you can actually add to this discussion, I think, would be helpful as we move these particular policy measures along.
Very well stated.
You got pretty close to it.
And
just real quickly.
Co-Chair Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm gonna jump on what the good Senator Witters has said. This is the real crux of the question here, and actually for me, the meaning of the report. We're not only talking about patients in the ER with dental pain and burning up health care dollars in the emergency room when they should be the dental chair. I know of at least two cases in my practice in the last 3 months where people who have horrible denture issues, infections of mouth, end up in the hospital with a condition called sepsis, which is an infection in the bloodstream. They both went into renal failure, and one had to have the aortic valve replacement. The cost of those two cases, easily $1 million apiece. If you look into the chart on it and you look back to see what the coding is on it, there's nothing about dental care in there at all. And yet dental care was the cause of the entire issue.
Yep.
So you can't get that information. You can't get it right now. There's $2 million on our health care system gone because those two people didn't get to the dentist when they should have, ended up with a problem. I think this is much more widespread, by the way, than we think of it. Mm-hmm. I commonly see people in the hospital who are septic, who have terrible infections in their mouth, but that is not listed as the cause. And in the last case, I asked the hospitalist to look in his mouth. Have you looked in his mouth yet? No. The guy had rotten teeth all through his mouth, and that's the real reason he was there. And then we had to get him to a dentist to get it cleaned out. So you can't capture the information. What I do get from this report is that we can't cut dental anymore. That's the bottom line. You might as well throw the program out at this point if you don't maintain the present level of care. If you don't do it, you're going to do it. Just what Senator Winters talked about. We're going to cost shift to the rest of the hospital systems and say, what happened to hospital systems? So my understanding is we're acknowledging a report today. That's all we're doing. But what we're taking away from this is no more cut to dental programs. They can't afford it. They will go under. We're going to lose one of the most important parts of our system.
And because we need to have a quorum to accept this report, and I'm going to need to have just a few minutes, I'd like to know if Dr. Shercliffe would like to make a couple comments as it pertains to this program. So be brief, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity. As you all know, it's oral health has been near and dear to my heart for a long time, and I appreciate the opportunity. I just want to thank all of you, especially Judy Moore-Peterson, for all the work that the staff has done over there, Dr. Goldberg. I mean, they included all the DCOs. And part of the reason why the DCOs couldn't reach agreement is we've kind of reached the bottom. We're kind of going like this. And all of us are looking at the infrastructure we have and what we've done over the years. Because over the years, part of what we've done and all the Medicaid system has done is we've taken on, 3 years ago, I think we were right at 360 to 400,000 lives, and now we're pushing 625,000 lives, and we've done that with actually less money and really done it pretty efficiently. But it's put an incredible strain upon the system. And this last cut, we all looked at our whole cards. We went through the process. We all looked at it. But we're kind of to the point where it's, like you've all said, it's tough to cut anymore. And in fact, I've been lobbying. This I told some of you that you've never heard me say we can't do it for less. You know, we've figured out. I've come back and said, a part of the problem is the inefficiency of the system. Is we have three adult packages that we have to administrate. The DMEP and the Oregon Health Authority has to administrate. It creates a lot of confusion. We spend a lot of time in the complaints process. I've had more complaints over the standard people who just get an emergency extraction program. We've had more complaints, therefore we spend more administrative time. And as well as the standard plan actually is costing us all money. So we're subsidizing the adult standard plan, which is really just an emergency extraction program to keep it out of the hospital. And so I really appreciate the understanding that you folks have, the staff, and the fact that the questions you're asking, because they're really the right questions. I'm really thankful for the conversation and for the time.
Thank you. Great. Thank you for those comments, and I do want to thank you and the rest of the dental community for all the help with the CCOs and the involvement and transformation, and I recognize that you guys have been very helpful and are on board with trying to do something better than we're doing now, as you have been for many years, so thank you. And with that, I would entertain a motion to accept the report.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move we acknowledge receipt of a report on efforts to implement dental service reductions that would protect pregnant women and children. That does not mean we agree with the report. We just accept the report.
Very well said. So I have a motion to acknowledge the report. Any discussion? Any opposition? For that, the report is acknowledged. Carry on. Representative Thatcher, would you care to carry that to full Ways and Means?
Sure, why not?
I think Representative Thatcher would love to do that. Okay, with that, we will open a work session on the ever-popular topic of the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange IT Project. Welcome. Please have, we will have our staff here introduce this subject and get right to it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, these are the folks from the Health Insurance Exchange IT project, as well as the corporation, the program side. During the interim, they reported on the progress of the IT project in September and November. So you've heard some of this before, so this is just the most recent update. I did want to note that while the agency's letter is a report, the LFO recommendation is actually to add some limitation to the budget because they have some additional dollars during this biennium. We talked about that issue during the rebalance in the January rebalance report, but we didn't actually include the dollars at that time because we knew this report was coming and this seemed more of an appropriate time. They have additional federal dollars for two reasons. One is they have agreement from their federal partners that they will get an additional $11.8 million for this project, and there's about $8 million that we had initially put into the 09-11 biennium, but that was unspent, and so now it will be carried forward to this biennium. So it is a total of $20 million federal funds expenditure limitation.
So great. And before you start, we're going to do this a little different, and then we're going to ask some questions up front so you know what we want. And then sometimes we use all the time up and there isn't time for questions. So I have just a few I'm sure are going to be in your report that are very important to me. One is a little bit more of a description of how much money we've spent to date, which I'm sure is in your report, and what we have bought with that money, and what we've purchased with all those dollars. And then probably the biggest question for me today, and it'll be very important to answer this question, is why is the IT project of Exchange disconnected from the policy portion of Exchange when I've constantly heard we can't move forward with the IT without the policy? So somehow, fiscally, we have separated the two issues, and I'd like to better understand why that has occurred. Is there any other questions we can put on the table before they start? Senator Bates.
Interaction with what they're doing with other parts of OHA as far as IT technology improvements and how it ties into potentially EMRs and physician private offices. Just a few comments that would be appreciated.
Okay. Thank you. And I apologize for reversing the order we ask questions, but I just thought we might save some time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. First one?
Oh, sure. Carolyn Lawson, Chief Information Officer of the Oregon Health Authority, Chair Freeman. In answer to the first question, as of the 10th of January, we spent $5,081,119 out of our total of $48 million that we have. And then 1 month later, to give you a perspective of the burn rate on the 12th, which was just 3 days ago, the total is $5,728,000 $726,665 spent today.
Okay.
And we spent those things on going back to the 10-1-12 numbers, about $970,000 was on personnel costs. We don't have consultant costs. We are being the systems integrator ourselves. Equipment costs is $116,000. General supplies, about $3,800. Travel, there's about $10,000 in travel, and most of that was to the conferences and meetings that were required by CMS, so it was paid for within the grant. Other expenses, about $86,000, that are things like facilities, and that does include the setup of the corporate offices. And then we have about $3.9 million that are other contracts that we have, which includes, in addition to our personnel costs, are the staff augmentation contracts that are short-term that come and go as we need additional assistance.
Okay, and well, we can ask this at the end, but it seems to me like if you had $48 million and you only spent five, doing another $20 million, we're going to get that from the physical office, but there's a misunderstanding about how much money has been spent if only a little over $5 million has been spent. So go ahead with your report.
Chair Freeman, members of the committee, for the record, Bruce Goldberg, director of the Oregon Health Authority. I was going to answer the second question, which was the you had indicated the disconnect between the IT project and the program.
The policy.
And the policy.
Yeah.
Let me back up and just the IT system itself is being developed to do several things. One, this allows people to, on the exchange, choose a health plan. It allows them to, it will be the way people will enroll in a plan. It will handle the premiums to the insurers, as well as it will manage the tax credits to individuals through the Internal Revenue Service. And the last thing that this system will do, and it really explains why we're all here, is when we went forward with this, the other piece is that this will also be the enrollment system for our Medicaid program as well. And hopefully this will also be a platform by which other public programs such as the SNAP program, people can apply electronically online rather than coming into offices. So that's how this entire project is being designed from the get-go. As a result, there's a component of the project that's within the health authority and a component of the project that's from a policy perspective and a program perspective that's within the insurance exchange. We've been working very closely, all of us, on syncing together both the program and the policy and the IT piece. And one of the issues is that as we learn more and more about the program requirements from the federal government, as well as more and more about the program requirements here in Oregon, that's how we then design the system. So they're linked closely, not really disconnected, and we're all working very well together.
Do you have additional part of the report you want to give? I know we're kind of done the questions now. Is there some more of the report you want to go
through? Sure. Just briefly then, in terms of the report, I indicated the purpose of the system. We've been reporting regularly. We continue to be moving forward as we develop the business criteria for the exchange and get more information from the feds. We continue to develop the IT side. We've always indicated from the get-go that this has been an aggressive timeline for the project. With that being Again, said we remain on time in terms of where we're going. The project is progressing well. There still are risks regarding the certainly the timeline and the scope of the project. But at this point in time, we remain cautiously optimistic that we at this point in time are moving forward as planned. We're also here today to ask for an additional $20 million in limitation. That's for two reasons. One is $8 million of carryover from funds that were budgeted last biennium. And as we have indicated from the start of this project, that it was likely that as there were additional federal requirements that were going to be put on this program, that the feds would be giving us additional dollars. We have been working with the feds most recently. They've indicated an additional $11.8 million to come to the project in addition to the 48 that were allotted to us. And so, therefore, we're asking for the $20 million of additional limitation. It's the last comment to Senator Bates's question, my apologies for not answering that up front, is this project is in many ways, as we're designing it, separate from electronic health records. This is really about enrollment into both commercial insurance as well as Medicaid, and it's to simplify the enrollment so that individuals can enroll from their home, and it manages the tax credits and Medicaid enrollment. It is not something at this point, as I think from the previous conversations, the world of electronic health records and linking clinical information is probably a more complicated and indeed expensive endeavor than this one. And so we're looking to have this as a project where we've got a clear goal and a clear endpoint, which is the summer of 2013 to complete the project.
Great, and maybe you could speak a little bit more to the timeline and the needs for additional limitation now. It's my understanding you have a limitation for $39 million of the initial $48 million grant. You just described you've spent less than $6 million. So my question is, what's the urgency for the additional limitation?
Chair Freeman, whenever you start a project of this magnitude, it ramps up slowly. You get the foundational pieces in place. You get the infrastructure set up. You do the initial training. You make sure you've got the requirements. You establish those work sessions. We're only we're six iterations into it. We're working on iteration seven, and we're right at the part where we start ramping up the development. We're going to see a curve that goes up exponentially in terms of spend, and it's related specifically to what we need to accomplish within the timeline.
Thank you, and I appreciate the sort of broad description of that. We have emergency board meetings regularly. I'm just curious as if there is a panic need to completely release all funds now and get the legislature out of this, or if there is enough resources within your current limitations to make it to the next e-board meeting where we could continue to have this dialogue. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that we're all supportive of the IT project, we all believe in the fact that you're doing good work and we want you to succeed. However, I think there is a little easier path forward if there's a continued involvement with the legislature. And I know Senator Bates has been very engaged in this and maybe understands it better than I do. And I'm going to commit to you right now to get up to speed on. I've been a little busy with some other stuff, but it seems as if that's moving along now. And maybe I could spend a little time and even come over to your facility and better understand kind of what's going on over the next few days or few weeks, and possibly even before we get out of session, do this limitation or at the first e-board meeting. So,
Chair Freeman, could I make a suggestion that perhaps what we could come back and do is lay out a schedule of a projected spend schedule, and then how much and sync that up with upcoming e-boards. And then we could put together when and how we would come back and ask for additional limitation. We had a lot of discussion internally with LFO staff as to the necessity of getting this limitation at this point. And I think what you're suggesting is exactly that. Lay out the schedule, be certain that we don't leave ourselves short of the ability to spend the money to carry out the project, but not get all of the dollars up front and continue to ask for limitation as we need it in an agreed-upon schedule.
And again, I want to be clear. I am very supportive of this IT project. Mm-hmm. I want it to be successful, and I don't want to do anything to get in the way of that. I mean, the last thing I would want to do is hold back a limitation and because of that the project not succeed. That being said, and none of your fault at all, but historically the IT projects here at the State of Oregon have not always gone perfectly, and it would be nice if we could feel very comfortable as we move forward that we're all on the same page and we are going to succeed with this one, and I do believe we are going to succeed, but I think some additional involvement would make more people feel more comfortable.
I just have a question.
Senator Winters.
I just have a quick question, and it's about the system's maintenance and whether you anticipate that to be done in-house as well, because you're doing your other IT work in-house, and just for simplification, for clarity, there, before you answer, there tends to be a pattern of when we do outside consultants that we don't actually train within the state those individuals to do the maintenance, so we're not only paying for the consulting activity outside of the state, but also for the maintenance outside of the state, and while we're in this whole conundrum of needing jobs, and we have not trained the individuals within our own boundaries and borders to maintain those systems that we've paid millions and billions of dollars for. So I ask you the question, if it's planned, that the maintenance of the system will be done in-house.
Good question.
Chair Freeman, Senator Winters, you just hit on one of my major pet peeves.
Thank you. Mine too, by the way.
It is astounding to me that we spend so much money on IT and we leave our own staff out of it. We are purposefully crafting this project differently. As you note, I've said several times, we have not hired a major systems integrator to go do it for us. We're doing it ourselves because we want to own not only the technology but the knowledge of how to take care of it so we can be nimble in the future, so we can change as the environment changes, and so that our own staff have that sense of being part of the technology itself. We're making great efforts to ensure that we get training and mentoring for staff as we go along, and it is our staff who are doing the majority of the development.
I want to thank you for having the same pet peeve that I have. We have lost millions of dollars that are going outside of this state, and even in Canada, by the way. But so I thank you. I share your pet peeve.
Is there more questions?
No, I'm...
Okay, and before we move on to the next senator, I do want to tell you I do appreciate your focus on getting your arms around this whole project and having the state have a position to do this correctly. In a previous life, my major in college, and I've told you this, but some of the other folks may not know, was computer systems engineering technology. So 100 years ago, I set out on a course to do exactly what you're doing, and I really do appreciate the efforts you're doing and understand a lot of the terms you use that others may not. So thank you. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, you provided the perfect lead into the question I'm going to ask, which is slightly tangential, but I think related. My policy committee right now is education and workforce development. And one of the concerns we have is whether we're doing a good enough job training people in Oregon to do the kinds of work that you're looking for. And I'm very curious, although it's not specifically related, but with the Chair's indulgence, I'd love to know how well you're being able to find Oregonians who can do the kind of work you need to do, or how many people you're having to import either from other parts of the United States or outside the country.
And I'll put a quick plug in for OIT as excellent people that know how to do this.
Chair Freeman, Senator Steiner-Hayward, We are doing our best to use Oregon people. We have had to bring in some folks from outside of Oregon in some highly technical roles. It is not necessarily because those roles are not available within Oregon. It's because the technology environment, economic environment in Oregon is heating up, and we can't afford to pay them what they can make. So we are drawing from other places which are not doing quite as well as we are in the technology environment when we do bring folks in.
Thank you very much. It's reassuring at least to hear that you can find people here.
Representative Thatcher, looks like she has a question.
You know, I'm not sure if it's a question so much as a holy cow statement, and that would have to do with when we left session, last session, we were at $48 million. That was pretty big. And now we're looking at $86 million so far. Do we anticipate more coming into this project total?
Chair Freeman, Senator, Representative Thatcher, what's happened is not that the project has grown, but we had the Hicks IT project. We had the modernization project, which included Medicaid, Medicare, Oregon Health Plan. And we had all of the other modernization, SNAP, TANF. We had kept the Medicaid, Medicare in with the other modernization projects and determined that it's really a key element of the success of the insurance exchange. So we took that piece out and moved it over. It decreased the size of the modernization project, increased the size of the Hicks project. It is no additional spend.
Thank you for clarifying that.
That's a good question. Senator Bates.
A question, then maybe a motion.
Perfect.
Anybody else had a chance to speak? How many jobs has this project produced in Oregon?
Chair Freeman, Senator Bates, 33.
Not a lot, but I'll take whatever I can get right now. Okay. I'm going to follow back on Senator Winter's comments, too. You know, one of the big problems for IT for a lot of businesses, if you outsource it outside the state, you can't get any support. And when something goes wrong, nobody can fix it for you. And that is a huge problem in IT. And so developing our own expertise here is very important. We've found in electronic medical records and other IT systems, especially the ones that we use, which are very complex, we commonly run into problems if it's an outside area trying to get information. Sometimes we're talking to people in foreign countries who don't speak English very well. And it's important that you do develop that internally and it be done properly internally. So I appreciate you that fact you're going down that path. I know you have to outsource some of this, but for the most part, I hope you can keep it in-house. And with that said, I would ask...
Senator Bates, if I might add bit to that answer. Co-Chair Freeman, members of the committee, my name is Amy Favre. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Corporation. I just wanted to add on to Carolyn's answer that while the IT side of the work has hired 33 people, the corporation has also hired 25 people. So the results of this work has been 58 additional jobs in the state.
And since it's a support center, I assume you're moving all those people to Bedford.
Lane County.
We'll share.
Can I recommend Washington?
Oregon.
Hey, we're in Marion.
You guys get all the good stuff.
A fair number of those jobs are currently in Marion County.
I would expect you. I expect they're here, and we'll probably stay here.
We'll work on that.
Mr. Co-Chair, would you accept the motion? I would move that we acknowledge a receipt of a report on the Health Insurance Exchange Information Technology Project.
Okay, there is a motion to acknowledge the receipt of the report. Is there any discussion about receiving the report?
Question.
Clarification. Question.
Thank you. This is merely receiving a report, not the what's included in the report in that they're requesting. We're not approving a request. We're just accepting the fact that they are requesting this eventually.
The motion is that we are accepting the report. I will, with the other co-chairs of this committee, work on the limitation timeline to make sure that we are not causing a problem moving forward, but working with you, not against you. But right now we are not approving the additional limitations. We're just receiving the report. Correct?
Correct.
Very good. Do I have any opposition to receiving the report? Seeing none. Report accepted. And I'm guessing that Senator Bates would love to get this report.
I would.
Great.
Mr. Co-Chair, before you adjourn.
Senator Winter.
I needed to step out to meet with my co-chair for public safety, and I didn't get the opportunity to vote on the report on the dental services.
Okay. So let me reopen the report on the dental services and give Senator Winters an opportunity to vote.
Aye in accepting the report.
Okay. Senator Winters votes aye in accepting the report on the dental reductions. With that, I'll close that. And any other further business for the committee? Seeing none, I will close the committee. Thank you all very much for being here.